Welcome to Copyright Clearance Center's podcast series. I'm Christopher Keneally for Beyond the Book. It is Friday, June 12th, 2020. Every week we check in with Publishers Weekly for the latest news on books and publishing. And once again, Andrew Albanese, PW Senior Writer, joins me from his home office in New York City. Welcome back to the program, Andrew.
Hey there, Chris.
After another week of anti-racism protest marches across the country, Andrew, it's clear that the call for change in our country in 2020 is loud and clear. But a question for you specifically is whether that change will come to the publishing industry at long last. This week, PW reported on a petition by publishing industry workers demanding action on diversity. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, that's right. I totally agree. It certainly does feel like that the country is finally on the verge of action when it comes to dealing with the systemic racism that continues to plague our nation. You know, it's been just, what, 2 weeks, over 2 weeks now of protests during a pandemic, no less. All of this, of course, following the murder of George Floyd at the hands of Minneapolis police. And, you know, while the George Floyd murder may have finally brought about the changes, that inhumane nearly 9-minute video of him being slowly and differently killed, you know, the shock of that seems to have gotten to the nation in a way that previous killings didn't. But we shouldn't forget that George Floyd is just one name in a long list, right? We had Trayvon Martin and Tamir Rice, who was just a child, and Michael Brown and Eric Garner and Philando Castile and Breonna Taylor and Sandra Bland. You know, the marches and protests, I think, do finally suggest that we're about to see real change to policing in our country, and maybe some broader changes as well, right? You know, you would think that, you know, NASCAR, for example, just banned the Confederate flag from its races, which is something I didn't think I would see in my lifetime. So finally, progress there. And I think I saw a poll from Monmouth just out yesterday showing that 76% of Americans see racism as a big problem. Only 16% see it as not a big problem. That also is, I think, a real big change. You know, I think the key point here is that, you know, a significant portion of our country, as that poll indicates, now realize that racism is our problem. It's a national problem. It's a problem that white America must engage with. It's not just a problem for people of color have and that we have to emphasize with.
So exactly what steps are publishing industry workers taking to address the issue?
Yeah, so in regards to the publishing industry, my colleague John Marr, who, by the way, has been writing and reporting pretty forcefully on these issues since he began at PW, he did an excellent report this week on the action taken by publishing industry employees. You can read that article on the PW site. It's up now. But basically, some 1,200 publishing workers drafted, mind you, together drafted a call to action, which includes taking a day off from work in protest to spend in service of the Black community. That's protesting, organizing, fundraising support, doing foam baking, offering other kinds of aid. And all of the signees also committed to donating one day's pay to a number of fundraisers that were rounded up by the group in a Google spreadsheet and shared as well. And as well as making that donation of a day's pay, they committed as well to making a monthly commitment to these organizations. And I really want you to think about that for a second, because many of these workers are not making a lot of money. You know, starting salaries in the industry, as we well know from this podcast, from talking about it, are paltry, right? You know, in my estimation, I think the major publishers, these large companies, should probably all agree to, at the very least, match the commitments of their staff. And it would be worth watching to see what the publishers do, what the major publishers do here. Because, you know, one thing is clear, we in this industry have not done enough. The petition, and I urge you can read the full text of it online at Publishers Weekly, specifically calls out the publishing industry's role in systemic racism. And that's, you know, basically its failure to hire and retain a significant number of Black employees or to publish enough books by authors of color, and its pursuit of profit over books, you know, that have merit, that should be heard. You know, it's a powerful statement. And I think it's on target.
And as you mentioned, this wave of protest is all happening amidst a pandemic that is far from over. In this week's PW, you explored how the pandemic is affecting public libraries.
Yeah, fascinating stuff. So after 3 months of an unprecedented lockdown to mitigate the spread of COVID-19, public libraries across the U.S. are now in the process of reopening. Some have already been in the early stages of reopening, but that's pretty much going on in all 50 states now. Public libraries are starting to look at what their reopenings are going to be. And what I've learned over the last few weeks is that the public libraries that are going to emerge from this historic pause are going to be significantly changed from the ones that closed their doors back in March, both in the short term and into the future. I think the most pressing issue facing libraries, of course, is how do they do it safely, you know, for library staff and for the public. And for most libraries, that's going to mean services like curbside pickup or, you know, limited numbers of patrons in the library to start and timing their visits, only letting them come in for 30 minutes at a time to pick up books or whatever, or use a computer. It's going to mean ensuring that library workers have the appropriate personal protective equipment, which can be difficult. It's going to mean reconfiguring the library space. That means less furniture, more distance between computer stations, hand sanitizer stations, more of them at least, spit guards, plexiglass dividers, things we're starting to see in many more places in the retail environment in America already. It's going to mean contactless checkout and new cleaning procedures and 72-hour materials quarantine. So when you return a book to the library, it's going to sit in a bin and out of circulation for 3 days while it, you know, we make sure that it's disinfected. It's going to also include new rules to enforce, such as physical distancing and wearing masks. And none of this is going to be easy. And all of it is going to be done under the threat of job cuts, a potential second wave of COVID-19 infections, which we're starting to see actually manifest itself in the States in the data now, and immense budget pressure, right? The economic effects of this are really starting to hit. And of course, worsening political dysfunction. So, you know, that's part of the reason why I think we're seeing so many library workers very loudly expressing their unease on social media with returning to work. There was a thread on Twitter recently where somebody asked, you know, what do you fear about going back to work right now? And one response said, I know that patrons are going to refuse to follow distancing rules and they're going to want to argue politics. And another librarian pointed out that even the best reopening plans, even the best precautions are still risk mitigation and not safety assurance.
And digital will be a big part of the changes we will see in libraries. And you write that that transformation won't be easy either.
That's right. And that's sort of a big part of this, too, that I don't know that we're paying enough attention to. You know, if you scan the national headlines on any given day, it will show libraries across the country reporting strong digital engagement. This is all in the wake of the pandemic. We've seen gaudy numbers like 300% or 400% increases in digital library uses, things like ebooks and digital audio. But the librarians that I spoke to all warned me that the success of their digital pivot during this crisis belies the complexity of the digital library market. And while many publishers and service providers have eased pricing and access restrictions during the pandemic, what happens when this is all over, when the pandemic finally ends, when we have a vaccine, that's still very much unsettled. And to that point, our readers will recall that it was less than 6 months ago. It was January of this year, at the end of January, at the ALA midwinter meeting in Philadelphia, that Macmillan CEO John Sargent defended the company's controversial embargo on new release ebooks in libraries, telling a room full of librarians that the library ebook lending system was tipping the book business and the publishing ecosystem out of balance. Well, 6 weeks after that talk, in the wake of the pandemic, Macmillan abruptly abandoned the embargo. There are times in life when differences should be put aside, Sargent offered as an explanation. And what I heard was, yeah, that's true, but this is not one of those times. You know, librarians all told me that, you know, they need to keep talking about this issue. Kelvin Watson, who's the director of the Broward County, Florida library system, told me that the pandemic may have given Macmillan sort of the perfect out to get out of the library ebook embargo policy, which was very controversial. But that doesn't mean libraries should not continue to stand up and speak out. Now is the time to put our foot down even more, he says.
And of course, there is the fate of the physical library as well to be determined. And you spoke to sociologist and author Eric Kleinenberg about that.
Yeah, you know, I was really struck when I was doing the research and the interviews for this article by, you know, talking to Lisa Rosenblum, who's the director of the King County Library System in Washington, one of the nation's biggest and best library systems. Lisa told me that, you know, the best thing that libraries ever did was to redesign their spaces over the last two decades to become social spaces. You know, in the wake of the internet, you didn't need all the room to keep physical books anymore. So they turned it into social spaces, and it absolutely transformed the library. And now that's all being upended. And King County, they just finished a 15-year, $175 million bond project. That's 50 libraries serving 1.4 million people in the Seattle area. It's a huge library system. And the libraries there, she says, are more beautiful than ever. They're just great. They're brand new. Some of them have fireplaces and views of the mountains. And Lisa says that, you know, people don't have to come to the library anymore, right? They can access the internet. They can get ebooks. They can get remote service. But they do come in. And that's been a point of pride. You know, people want to come into the libraries and they want to stay. And now she says, until there's a vaccine for this novel coronavirus, staying in the library is suddenly a bad thing. So Eric Kleinenberg, fantastic author. I spoke to him. He thinks people will be back in libraries. And indeed, he thinks people will need to be back in libraries. Eric Kleinenberg is, of course, the author of the acclaimed 2018 book, Palaces for the People: How Social Infrastructure Can Help Fight Inequality, Polarization, and the Decline of Civic Life. It's a fantastic book. I highly recommend it. Got a star review in PW and rave reviews elsewhere. Well, Kleinenberg agrees that it's been amazing to see libraries increase their ebook offerings and other digital services during this crisis. But the shutting down of cities and public spaces, this last few months of being, you know, sort of shut away in our apartments and homes, has generated incredible challenges. Not only an economic recession, he says, but a social recession. We now have millions of people who are isolated, feeling stressed, out of sorts, he says. And I'm raising my hand here. You can't see it on the podcast, but I'm one of those people. Kleinenberg says that to him has magnified the importance of the public library in American community life. There's simply no other place that has the capacity to bring people together, he told me. At the same time, it's also a moment of great vulnerability for libraries, he conceded. To the extent that the economic damage caused by the pandemic becomes apparent, you know, at this very moment when we need libraries more than ever, local officials, many of them, are going to instead feel they have to cut or maybe shut down some libraries entirely. And I think he's right. You know, most libraries are funded locally, right? They're funded by local tax dollars, and local budgets are going to be absolutely hammered by the pandemic. Now, there is, of course, a potential lifeline, and that's the federal government, which, given the state of our politics, is not exactly encouraging. So all of this means that, you know, the library advocacy stakes, or I should say the advocacy stakes for people who value libraries, has leveled up. It's at a level it hasn't been at, if ever, in decades, if not ever. So we need to be clear, Kleinenberg says, that when people hear that there's a debate in Congress about whether to bail out states and cities or to let them go bankrupt, as certain senators have said, that is a debate about whether your local library stays open or closes, he says. That's about whether the park system stays open or closes. That's about schools and teachers. And he says the American voters are going to need to connect the dots, or we could find ourselves without many of the institutions that keep us stable.
Well, Andrew Albanese, Publishers Weekly Senior Writer, we connect with you every Friday, and I want to thank you for joining me today, and we look forward to speaking with you next week.
My pleasure, as always.
Coming up on Beyond the Book, over recent years, publishers have expanded and evolved strategies for combating content piracy in response to increasingly sophisticated counterfeiting techniques. The most promising ways forward involve collaboration across businesses, industries, and continents, says McKeel Coleman, past president of the International Publishers Association.
Publishers play a vital role in cultivating and establishing credibility for new knowledge, for upholding the values of academic freedom in an increasingly polarized society, and in providing trusted facts in an era of fake news. In scholarly publishing, we're seeing publishers working collaboratively to streamline access, to make it easier for researchers to discover the trusted full text content. And access is more important today during the corona pandemic, especially remote access as an alternative to traditional avenues to content cut off by the virus.
Global strategies to combat counterfeiting. Next on Beyond the Book. Our show is produced by Copyright Clearance Center. Our co-producer and recording engineer is Jeremy Brisky of Burst Marketing. Subscribe to Beyond the Book wherever you go for podcasts and follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Our complete show archive is available at beyondthebook.com. I'm Christopher Keneally. Thanks for listening, and join us again soon on CCC's Beyond the Book.